Good morning. Today is October 31st, 2020. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada, and we are just a few days away from the U.S. election, which has captivated the minds, energies of people all around the world. The focus has, of course, been on Donald Trump and Joe Biden, who are the figureheads, the representatives of the two major political parties in the United States, the Democrats and the Republicans. But I think equally importantly, at least, and in the long run, more importantly, are some of the other candidates who are running, specifically as independents. And this is my second time being joined in a discussion by Dr. Valerie McCray, who is running as an independent candidate for President of the United States. She is at the end of her campaign, and I am so looking forward to hearing her thoughts on the political process, running as an independent, and all of the above. So welcome, Valerie. So nice to speak with you again.
Well, thanks for inviting me again. It's always a pleasure. I feel very supported by you, and that's always great. That's always great. As an independent, you get lonely out here. It can get a little lonely out here, so we're glad to have the supports where we have it.
Well, you're totally supported by me. I think that, you know, the very fact that you've done this at all is tremendous, but you've absolutely followed through. I mean, we talked, I think, in July. Here we are a few days before the election. You have campaigned and you are actually on the ballot. So congratulations for that. So let's begin with, tell me a little bit about the journey. Why did you decide to run as an independent? Let's start there. Why not take what I would call the easy, more traditional route of trying to latch on to some established party?
You know, I was a lot of it, I have to tell you, most of it was just being naive. I just really thought that, hey, if I felt like I can do it, if I was smart enough to do it, had the energy to do it, I should just do it. I did go to the Democratic Party and say, this is what I wanted to do. And I noticed that they weren't set up for somebody like me. They just weren't set up for that. They already had someone in mind. And in here in Indiana, they had Buttigieg, and they also were waiting for Biden. But as the time went on, I also noticed that I didn't really fit that Democratic Party mold so much. There were so many things that I just disagreed with or agreed with. I had different ideas. And then I also noticed how it was, oh gosh, it's a machine. The Democratic, the DNC, and it's probably the same at the RNC. It's a political machine that has very little to do with what the American people want. It's more about how do you operate that machine, and trying to hook your train onto that machine, that caboose, was sort of, I think you have to be part of the game for a lot of years to be able to hook your train up to the Democratic caboose. And then you're thinking, do I even want to be on that train? And my decision was, you know, no, I don't really want to be on that train. Not that the train was accepting me anyway. So it was a combination of them sort of ignoring, like, oh, maybe she'll go away if we ignore her. I got that feeling. But also, there was also that thing inside of me that said, wait a minute, the more I hear myself talk, I don't think I really fit the Democratic Party anyway. And, you know, as you talk out loud, the people are like, you know, you're really more independent, Doc. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I'll just throw in the towel with this whole thing and just go independent and just say it out loud. I'm going independent. And a lot of my staff was like, yeah, they were really excited about that. Of course, at the end, it started to get pretty hard because financially, without being part of that train, you are really, really scrapping for money and scrapping for just to pay basic bills as far as just even keeping your internet up or keeping this up and, you know, getting flyers and that sort of thing. You start pulling stuff out of your pocket and volunteers are like, okay, well, I'll pay for this, or, you know, it gets to be financially taxing. It's been rough, but we stayed in. And that was the thing. Let's just stay in no matter what. So we did. We did. We managed to stay in.
God, you know, if I listen to you talk, I have these images of the movie Rocky One.
Okay.
Where, you know, what you may remember is that basically, you know, the goal was just to stay standing at the end. And that's what you've done. So maybe that could be the theme song of your campaign, perhaps one in the future. But, you know, the thing is this, right? Like, I fully understand the Democrats don't want you. It's not that they don't want you. It's that they're a machine and they've already decided who they want. It's somebody's turn. Yeah, exactly. So I wouldn't take it personally. But most people would just throw in the towel. Well, that's it. Democrats don't love me. I guess I'm not destined to run for president. But rather what you said, well, okay, you know, so when I'm running for president either way, and I'm running as an independent, so tell me what kind of person, like what is it in you that, you know, would get you to say, well, you know what, basically I don't need anybody's permission to run for president. I'm just kind of going to do this. What makes you different from so many others?
You know, I think it gets to the point where it's a responsibility. What people don't realize is what I do on a day-to-day basis. And what I do on a day-to-day basis, I listen to story after story, and I do disability evaluations for veterans that have been through these terrible wars. I hear the nitty-gritty, the real stories behind the stories. I get, when I'm not there, I'm working in prisons. I see where there are two people come in with the exact same charges and might have a difference in sentencing from 8 months. Okay, this person's going to be rolled in and out in 8 months if they're on good behavior. And this next person for the exact same charges might have 20 years to life for the exact same charges. So those sort of discrepancies of seeing lives thrown away for political reasons or depending on who the judge was or who the prosecutor was at the time, that was bothering me as well. But I also watched how a lot of different communities were being disenfranchised. And as I worked in prisons, for example, I'm in these little small, predominantly all white rural towns that are depending on these prisons as their way of their employment status, because a lot of their industries have been closed over the years. Everything's been shipped overseas. So I understand their pain as well to see these little dead towns where their downtown areas are empty. So I understood that on a different level because I'm all over these little small towns. And then also as working with doing the military stuff, I'm all over the country. So I was seeing certain themes happening over and over again. And then those were those flight attendant days where I was all over the world. So it's like this combination of things. For example, as I was a flight attendant, it was like, okay, what's the closest university? Okay, to where I'm stationed now, which was in Detroit. Okay, I'll try University of Michigan. I got in and wound up being probably a star student there. And they asked me to, you know, be in their graduate program. So this combination of things, and even as a psychologist, as a student there, they allowed me to do community psych stuff. So I had a van where I took my students into Detroit to do more community-based work while I was at University of Michigan. So just the combination of everything that has happened to me and for me, I was like, I would be a good candidate. They sort of need that. I think I need it out there because my feet are to the ground every day. And I don't think we have a candidate. Biden talks about being from Scranton, but how many years ago has that been? You know, I think he still has an eye on things. But at the same rate, I think we need candidates that understand how the urgency of the situations that are going on now. So that's where I thought, well, we need somebody who has that urgent feeling about this needs to be done, this needs to be done, and how is it affecting people on a ground level. So, and I know what it's like to struggle financially as well. So I thought somebody needs
especially after your campaign.
Yes, especially after the campaign. I remember funding this campaign for out of pocket for a little while, for quite a while. And then finally I said, hey guys, if we don't get these donations, then I'm going to crash. I'm about to financially crash. We got to get these donations in if we can get them. The donations didn't happen and I did crash. So climbing out of that is interesting. Luckily, I've had this experience before because I was a business owner as well. I've had this experience before when the economy crashed back in 2003, 2004. So I was sort of familiar with what I needed to do to climb back out of this a bad situation. But so I've had it from every direction. So I thought, okay, you need somebody who understands what it's like on a day-to-day basis in Washington. But yeah, the candidacy, it left some bruises, that's for sure. So I have to lick my wounds and heal up these bruises, but I'm planning on getting right back out there for 2024. We're starting to revamp our website and that sort of thing already. So
that's incredible. So on that, like, what have you learned from this? Let's speak general, because I'm a huge supporter of independent candidates. So for a moment, imagine you're speaking to independents, people who are considering running as independent candidates, really the world over, all these, first world democracies where the political process is dominated by these mainstream parties. What would be some piece of advice that you would give as actually having done this, right?
I would say that contrary to people thinking you have to have a huge ego to do this, I think it's more you have to have a lot of humility to do this, because you get criticized and hit from all sides. So if you're not willing to take the hits and ask the questions back and stand firm when someone attacks and be able to at least stand your ground and at least listen. So a lot of times knowing how to turn things into a question and put it back to people is very it helps being a psychologist or somebody who can actually stop and listen and be calm under situations. So know your personality and know what you can withstand. I think that you definitely need to build more coalitions and get help from where you can.
What would be an example of that?
Trying to get students, for example, from the university to help. That has helped me to try to get young people. Coalitions such as people running for a different office. You're like, hey, I can be at your place or be with this, walk with you on your campaign and just make sure we don't necessarily make deals, but we support each other, make coalitions like that, or just show up. When people are trying to get stuff off the ground, they appreciate it when you just show up at their events. And a lot of times they will reciprocate. One thing I learned as a candidate, though, that people want to use you for their events, but they don't necessarily reciprocate. Another thing that I've learned is that I found out that I could call Wisconsin. I had a tech guy. I needed some tech information on how to do something with my computer. I'm like you. I'm a lug or whatever when it comes to technology. So I had a question with a tech guy that was in Wisconsin somewhere, some small town. And I said, told him my name. And he said, oh, are you the Dr. Valerie McCrae that's running for president? And I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, I am. And he knew about the candidacy. And that happened two or three times in weird places in the United States where people were emailing me or texting me, trying to friend me or on Indeed or trying to find me from weird places. But it was interesting that right here in the city of Indianapolis, where I have tons of people who know who I am, getting the word out that I was running for president has been even more difficult in the town that you're from than it is to get it out to the general United States. So I guess this is biblically speaking, is that you are more respected or followed more closely or taken more seriously by people that aren't really close to you or that aren't in your general vicinity. You have to go outside of your community to get the momentum. Because if you count on your community to give you the supports and you're the momentum, they can't do it for you because you're too close. You have to go outside of that. And if to do it all over again, I would not waste as much time as I did trying to get the supports, trying to get my team from my community. Does that make sense?
Sure does.
I would do differently. That I learned the hard way. It's like, this is not a waste of time, but it's just so much more difficult. It's easier.
Well, it's a question of trying to identify, the best use of time in terms of efficiency, I think.
Exactly.
So I think one thing that you and I both agree on absolutely is the importance of independent candidates in the political process. I think we both agree that we're on the road generally to diminishing the importance of the parties, in favor of independent candidates. What are some areas today, just generally, let's say that somebody were to say to you, Dr. McCray, you're one of the best, candidates, persons I've met in years, but I'm a party person and that's why I'm going to vote, unless you can tell me why it's important to vote for an independent ignoring your chances of winning. I mean, why in your view is it important for independent candidates to be a big part of politics?
I think that now, I think it's more clear now to everyone how the two-party system has really got us to the point where it just doesn't even make sense anymore. And so the way that I try to explain it to people is this, it doesn't matter that you believe in Democrat or Republican Party, but you have to at least believe in the fact that there's a lot of stalemate that happens when you have just two parties. There's a lot of things that compromises that get made that doesn't work for either side because there's just two parties. Would you at least agree that we need at least a third party candidate to break the tie? Wouldn't you at least agree that we need a third party president so that we don't get in these stalemates? It's like the way I describe it is that the most stable piece of furniture is a tripod because you've got at least three things going. Anytime you have just two parties, it can be dumped either way and you're forced to go one direction or the other and one side is going to lose. With a third party candidate, it stabilizes everything. I actually, during my tumble and fall financially while I was running independent, one of the things I did to survive was to start driving Lyft, right? It doesn't pay very much, but what I did was I used that as a campaign, to actually get the word out. I didn't actually campaign, but what I did do was poll everyone that got in my taxi, so to speak. And I basically said, okay, what do you want for your next president? Or do you want to keep the one that you have? Now I'm here in conservative Indiana, and most of the people that got into my Lyft, and some of them were from very affluent counties. Some people were from college towns, and you drive all over the place. But most of them described me. They described an independent candidate is what they wanted. They want somebody who's not pulled in every direction. They want somebody who's not led by the big money corporations. They want somebody who thinks about the environment, but they want somebody who sort of understands their views and that's not politically or money motivated. They described me. And I was like, wow. But would I guarantee that those people didn't vote Democrat or Republican? No. But they declared that they were independent. I'm really an independent thinker. That's what I got from everyone. Almost half of the people I'd say over half the people that got into my taxi, into my Lyft, so to speak. And so that was an experience. They described this. And at the end, I'd say, you know what? You kind of described me. Here, look me up. And that's how I would do that. And, you know, so, yeah, I got a lot of good tips that way, too. It's like, oh, well.
What an interesting way to run a campaign.
It was a blast. It was a blast to run a campaign out of a share ride program. I really did.
Well, I don't think it's a bad idea, actually. You know, and every one of those people who you talk to, they say, oh, my God, you know, my Lyft driver is running for president of the United States. Like, here?
Exactly.
You know, you can't buy that kind of publicity. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like the more customers you have on your Lyft thing, I mean, the better the marketing.
Right. If it weren't for COVID-19 and me being sort of afraid to be locked in a car with all the germs, I would still probably do it just for the fun of it. But it was really a great way to kind of get a pulse of what people actually wanted as opposed to what they were actually getting. And they realized they weren't getting what they wanted on either side. So that was really interesting. Most of the people I knew that were affluent, that were for Trump, it was just a single party issue. They didn't want their stock portfolio to drop down. That was their thing. As long as my money's good, I'm okay with whoever in there. That was their, that's why they were okay with Trump. You know, then I got some of the, you know, the people that I could tell were more of the Fox Network news followers. And they were kind of just, this is the way I'm going to go. But for the most part, people just really wanted to talk about how they felt about all of this. And that was, those were very interesting rides. And only at the end of the ride did I let on that I was running independent. And so
it was, what was the reaction? What was the reaction?
there were a couple of people like, oh my God, can we take a picture with you? Can we get a selfie and that sort of thing? I got a few really good tips because I got, you know, like a $40 tip and a $100 tip because I'm not going to take the time to donate to your campaign, but here's a tip, you know, this will get you going. It was pretty cool. And I think that I really enjoyed the ones that I took to the airport because they were going to, that became really fun because the people I took to the airport, they were going to different states. And then I would send them with several cards and say, hey, let people know there's other candidates out there. And they're like, we'll be glad to. This has just been the weirdest experience. Or sometimes I would say, tell me about the most interesting Lyft driver you've ever had. And then I'd say, I bet I could beat that. And then we talk about other stuff, and I said, well, here we go. I'm running for president of the United States. And they're like, get out of here. Are you for real? And then I have them to look it up on their telephone. I said, type in Dr. Valerie McCray and see what you get. Google me. And they would Google me on the phone while they were in the lift. And then they'd be, oh, my God. And then they'd immediately start texting people. I'm riding a lift with a presidential candidate. Can you believe that? You know, and that sort of thing. It was hilarious. It was hilarious. I would do it again, just like that. Yeah.
That's a very, very interesting idea.
Yeah. Wow. It came out of necessity. Trust me on that. It came out of necessity.
What's that saying? Necessity is the mother of invention. Is that the saying?
Absolutely.
God. So, let's move over to something that we talked about a little bit before starting the recording here. So I think we both agree that this is important. But, you know, one of the problems with the, you know, complete monopolization of the, you know, the parties run everything appears to be the extension now of judicial appointments to political parties, right? So, you know, you would, I mean, the whole purpose, it seems to me, of having courts and that is because I think they're supposed to be independent, you know, sort of neutral thinkers, arbitrators, et cetera. But when you have, you know, first of all, you know, the president who is running as a member of a political party making these appointments, seems to me that you got a situation where the biggest issue and the most important legacy of any president is the ability to make these judicial appointments, right? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that the way the Trump administration has made judicial appointments, at least the way it's been, the media has played it out, it's been specific to whatever he needed to have happen or to put the things in place. So in case this happens, he would have the right people to vote a certain way. And that's problematic. But I think McConnell and those guys were also trying to stack the courts. And it's funny how they change it and put it back on the Democrats to say that, hey, they're going to stack the courts. But that's exactly what they've been doing for the past, 3 years, is stacking the courts with conservative judges all across the U.S. Whether or not they had the experiences or not, it seemed like the only qualification they needed was to be a conservative judge. I think that when we get into a judicial system that's based on party, that becomes very, very, very scary coming down the line. So it doesn't matter whether it's Democrats or Republicans, if the judicial system is conservatively ran, the outcomes are going to be conservative if it gets to the Supreme Court. So that's very problematic. I think that I'm not sure what the Democrats will do. They're already accusing them of wanting to stack the courts. I think they're saying that because they know that something will have to be done to balance out the fact that they have stacked the courts very conservatively, very white conservatively, and it does not represent what America looks like right now. They had no intention of doing that. It was stack the courts, very conservative white judges, and I don't think very many of them. I heard it was only really one biracial person in 198 judges that were appointed. So that's problematic that you don't represent the United States.
Yeah, let me just ask you to perhaps elaborate on that a little more. The risk of asking you to articulate the obvious, nevertheless, why in your view is it important for the composition of the judiciary to generally reflect the composition of a country?
I think that if you don't, that means that you've disenfranchised and you've got a whole bunch of people. There is no way for people who haven't lived an experience or live close to an experience to be able to judge how things need to go down the line. If you have not been a poor person in Alabama, how would you know someone hasn't? How would you even know how to judge, vote on Roe v. Wade if you don't know the realities of what people go through? This is not just a racial issue, but a socioeconomic issue. It's a cultural issue. You have to have differences of opinions. No matter what, it's important to have, it's the differences of opinions that move this country along. You have to have some conflict. You have to have some outside ways of thinking of things, or you're going to be going down the same terrible roads as you've already been going down. You just need to be diverse to make sure that you're looking at things from a holistic standpoint. Anything short of that is just, it's tragic. Anything short of that, there's no word for it, but it's just tragic.
And of course, to the extent that you see it as a problem, and I do agree that it's a problem, but this is, a direct result of the dominance of the political parties. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The political parties have pushed this to where it's a do whatever we can do to win mentality. And that includes stacking the courts. That includes doing crazy things with the elections, voter suppression, any of that, anything it takes to win for that particular party. And it's like, whatever it takes to win is the philosophy, seems like, on sometimes both sides of the aisle. And that in itself needs to stop. We need an independent candidate. We need strong independent candidates to break that up, that can be reasonable in the midst of all this crazy divide. The fact that Trump can divide people based on party, that was problematic anyway. That he could so easily do that. He took what was already there and just made sure he wedged in that little gap and just divided it up.
Identify the differences and perhaps exacerbated them.
And exacerbate them, exactly.
I mean, do you think that America has reached a point where, they simply are blind to, I think, the obvious that what should unite Americans is far greater than what divides them?
I think that, unfortunately, we have, this will be a sociological study for the next 50 years of this media influence that we have now. And I hate to say the media thing, but people really are living in different worlds depending on whether they watch Fox News or whether they watch CNN. Two different worlds. So, and you have this cancel, the people talk about the cancel culture. It's gotten to the point where confirmation bias, people are only listening for things that they agree with on both sides. And they have this cancel culture where if you're not saying exactly what I believe in, I'm just going to just, zap you. I'm just not even going to listen. So this division, I think, is even worsened by sort of the media and even social media. Because what you'll find is that if you have an idea, you have an opinion, all of a sudden you'll get a lot more information that confirms your opinion. So everybody's taken down these two rabbit holes. So you've got the conservatives and the Democrats, Republicans, they're all down these two rabbit holes. And that in itself is more powerful than anything that Trump is saying or Biden is saying. It's these the way the media is set up, you get more and more of the same thing that you already agree with. So you get more things to confirm your opinion, even if it goes into conspiracy realms, you've got the conspiracy folks that are just, they really believe all the stuff that they're handed. The rabbit holes of information is what's causing more of the problem than anything.
Yes, and of course, to a very large extent, I think that we start from the principle that the existence of the political parties and the role they play is really an excuse for not having to do any independent thinking at all, right?
Absolutely.
Voting becomes habitual. Who's the Democrat? Who's the Republican? This, that, or the other thing.
It has been reduced to just these what do you call these whistle calls or whatever, these pat phrases. This person's going to be socialist. This person is going to be get without a law and order. There's going to be, Trump says, well, he's fixed things. He's keeping low income people out of the suburban for the white suburban women. He's trying to keep their suburbia safer. And then on the Democratic side, they're doing a little bit of the same thing, but not so much. But it's gotten to the point where people aren't even looking at what the issues and the policies really are. They're just going on these little whistleblower things. Even the race as a independent, we're also being, our fate has been determined by these little pat phrases, like a vote for you is a vote for Trump. People aren't really even thinking through that process. How is a vote for me a vote for Trump?
Yeah.
They say that, but they believe that. people are going on pat phrases and not necessarily on what actually is the policy, what actually makes sense. People are being very, they're not being very diligent about really following through with their thoughts or really researching what the issues really are.
Yeah. Okay, so we're now 3-4 days away from the election. Now, I mean, I think it's amazing that, you know, you're still standing and doing this at all. It's to me, it's incredible. Yeah. And my God, I don't know how to put into words the amount of credit and thanks that you deserve from the American people for doing this.
Thank you.
Just for running. But it is so hard as an independent. Like, how many states are people able to vote for you, if I'm putting the question correctly?
They can write me in about 22 different states. In Indiana, it's definitely the case. There are about 9 states that don't take independent candidates, period. They don't take write-in candidates. Period. There are.
Well, that seems so totally anti the antithesis of democracy, don't you think?
It definitely is. And then there are some states that you can write anybody in. You can write in Mickey Mouse and they'll count those votes. But there are most states that require something, so many signatures. In the end, between the COVID-19 and the pressure that my staff was getting, we are missing the last, like, deadlines. Like, some states you can do it even as of voting night, you know, to file this paperwork. So we still have a few that we can get. I'm not sure if my team is up to those or not. I know that I've got a few messages that says, hey, we just got Louisiana, for example. But they're kind of hiding right now because they've got such a pushback. It's been almost violent what's been happening with my team. And I'm sure it's not just my team. It's all the India. There's other independent candidates out there, by the way. They're getting the crap beat out of them emotionally or financially.
Can we do a bit of a shout out? Why not? Let's do a shout out to any of them, some of them.
I think I can't think of, my brain is dead. Doug Jenkins is still out there. There's a couple, oh my gosh, a husband and wife team. I hate to give I'm terrible with names.
But there are others who are sort of candidates.
Yeah, I wish on the break I would have got those for you.
That's okay. I mean, yeah. you're the one who I know just because we just connected in early summer. But you know, I have just the utmost respect for anybody who can do this. It is so extraordinarily difficult.
Thank you. But yeah, my staff were losing friends because of when they go to say we need these signatures, they that pat phrase, a vote for this person is a vote for Trump. What they don't realize too is that some of the people that would vote that are voting for me are actually are Trump supporters that would vote for Trump, not just vote for Biden. So being independent, you know, if I'm pulling from anyone, it's both sides. But most independent thinkers don't really want to vote for either side. So,
tough if you think about it. I would agree. It's really, really tough. But what you're describing is a situation where it's the view of many that if you're not a Republican or a Democrat, you're not allowed to be in the political process.
Right. And that's what I'm determined to change. The thing about it, the more people push that, the more determined I was to stay in. It's like, no, I am not going to fall for this lesser of two evils. I'm not going to, the more they push me to get out, wanted me to get out to vote for, to be pro-Democrat or Republican, the more that push was, the more I pushed back and said, no, I'm not getting out because this lesser of the two evils thing has to stop. We have to stop thinking and voting with our fears instead of voting with what we know is right, the right thing to do. Vote for what we want instead of voting for what we don't want. That's traumatic. That can never be successful in the long run. But that's what we're dealing with. And I think with the first debate, you would be surprised of how many people contacted me and said, are you still in the race? Because after that first debate, we don't want to vote for any of these. I don't want to vote for either of these people. And so that was happening a lot. So after the first debate, we sort of revitalized. We're like, okay, now people get it. And we sort of, okay, we're still in. We start throwing stuff back out there a little bit to say, if you're not wanting either party, Dr. Valerie McCray is still out there. So that's what we did. So, but we also didn't want to hurt any candidate either. So we were walking this thin tightrope of not wanting to not say anything bad about the candidates, but at the same rate to say that we're out there. It was it's a very, very thin line to walk.
That it is. Yeah. Or to stand, and you are still standing. You know, I'd love to. Can we have a discussion after the election, sort of your...
I would absolutely love to have a discussion after the election, because this is where my psychology hat will have to come into play. So I will be a politician / for a brief period, the psychologist in me will be more prominent, because people are going to have to learn how to conceptualize and deal with whatever this outcome is that's going to happen 3 days from now. How as a people are we going to be able to come together and move forward? So the psychology hat, we can definitely talk about that, but then you'll see more of the psychologist in me instead of the politician, I'm sure, at that point.
Okay, well, look, definitely looking forward to that. Well, thank you so much. And once again, I'm speaking with Dr. Valerie McCray, who is and has been for a significant period of time actively running as an independent candidate for president of the United States. So, and actually, in closing, what are your coordinates? Where would people contact you? Where might they even send you money, even without a Lyft ride?
You can contact me at our website is McCray2020.com. It's really easy. McCray, 2020.com. Or if you just type in Valerie McCray, Dr. Valerie McCray, anything like that will get you to our original website. And please, if you love to donate, and that will give us, you know, more of a stand going into the next election. Of course, this one, you know, never give up. You never know what's going to happen. And those votes do matter. I'll take them. McCray2020.com is how you will reach me. And everybody can email me. People email me all the time at drvaleriemccray.com or drvalerie@McCray2020.com. Either of those, any of that will get to me. And I can, if you want to get to donate, I can send you to the donate site. So you say, call me, just call me. I'll figure it out. You'll get
to it. All right. That's great. Well, you know, I think that you're incredible. And I think that when the history of the independent movement is written, you may be chapter one.
Oh, that would be great. That would be great. Well, we'll stand in there, and I thank you for your support, and your podcast is wonderful, well needed, and you are wonderful as always. So I look forward to talking to you after the election.
We will definitely do that. And, you know, like, I know you're not sleeping until, you know, whatever, till the election. So I'll give you a few days of sleep nonstop, and then we'll collect your dreams, and then we'll pick it up again.
All right.
Thanks so much, Valerie.
All right. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye.